The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Welcome on in to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I am Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. A busy week of sports we have coming up. We have the NBA playoffs starting up with the play-in tournament. Suns don't tip off until Sunday. We have the Diamondbacks here in full swing. If you're a fan of college football, ASU, U of A spring games coming up. I believe NAU coming up as well. So a ton to get to, and let's waste no time here. Our rundown brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you and taking care of your business. On today's show, we have Andrew Greif of the Los Angeles Times. He does a great job covering the Clippers, and we kind of break down just where both teams are at heading into the postseason, the 4-5 matchup. We just saw a lot of the Clippers over the past couple of weeks. Now we get to see a little bit more of them. What's Paul George's status? What, how has Russell Westbrook come in and been effective so early on? And these are two teams I feel like that have kind of similar paths right now. A lot of changes to the roster, not that long ago. The continuity between these two teams, there hasn't been a ton, honestly. On the Clippers side, it's been a lot of injuries, lots of in and out, that sort of thing. And then you have Kevin Durant getting traded for. He comes in, they've only had 8 games with him. So what's that going to look like? How do the Clippers feel heading in to this matchup with the Phoenix Suns? All of that coming up with Andrew Greif. Appreciate him jumping on. So, regular season has wrapped up. And I think if you're the Suns, you just have to be happy solely based on like you are relatively fully healthy. Yesterday, Cam Payne was out with an injury. Bismack Biyombo, we need to check out what's going on with them. I think Biyombo is going to be a big piece to this puzzle. Just again, bringing that intensity, being able to be a guy that can, when DeAndre Ayton has to go out, he can be a guy that subs in and, you don't have to worry about too much. So he went, he had a little knee-to-knee collision with Anthony Davis. We'll see kind of where he's going out. But a week until the games get going for the Suns and the Clippers, they tip off game one on Sunday. I have a feeling, with this team, priority number one, what's been the biggest issue for this team the past 2 years? And that's it's really been health. They've been able to overcome a lot. They've been able to play well. But Chris Paul's health, seems to, their various injuries have kept him out or kept him as effective as he can be. They went all in with Kevin Durant. So how do you now use the rest of that roster to make sure that, he's getting what he needs, and that they still have that depth, because that did take a hit. I think the past couple games, it's been helpful to make sure that this second unit, is where it needs to be. I think it's a massive advantage not to have to deal with the play-in. You know who you're playing. It's kind of a weird thing to know, like, okay, you can start prepping for the Clippers right now. They can start prepping for you, but you're not waiting around wondering who your opponent is. You're also, getting that rest that you really need and frankly deserve. The Arizona Diamondbacks, they're stringing some things together. 4-game series this past weekend, D-backs take 3 of the games from the Dodgers and put up, as Torrey Lovello will say, some nice crooked numbers. 11 runs scored, 12 runs scored, 6 runs scored. Previously against the Padres, they put up 8 runs. There was a lot of struggles offensively with these first couple series. Now we're seeing what this offense can do. This was a game, 11 runs, 0 home runs. And I think if you're the Diamondbacks, you have to be really excited about that, because you don't have a roster of like a ton of home run hitters. You have Christian Walker, Ketel Marte has a little bit of pop. Some of these young guys, I think, could certainly serve as power hitters, but you are manufacturing runs. And when you look at this outfield, when you look at Alec Thomas, when you look at Corbin Carroll, when you look at McCarthy, like those are some speed guys that you can really manufacture the runs. And Corbin Carroll, you're already seeing on the bases every single time he gets on. It feels like it's like, okay, he's going to take one bag, maybe two here to really help manufacture those runs and everything you need. So Christian Walker also off to a great start as well. For the pitching staff, going to be interesting to watch. We've already had Madison Bumgarner get sent home, to get structurally everything looked at for him, for his health. And then you lose Zach Davies as well. And it feels like it's not going to be, he's going to miss a start. It's going to be some time. So now you have Dre Jameson in the rotation, and he's one of the highest touted guys in the farm system. He's been effective as a reliever. He's done some long stints already. Now he's into the rotation. So what's that going to look like? I think talent-wise, like, he certainly deserves to be there, but now who slides into that role as that long reliever? How do they – we saw how much the bullpen struggled last year, so what's the patchwork that you have to do to make sure that you're taken care of? So that's going to be interesting to see moving forward. The Brewers coming to town. The beginning of this schedule is pretty hardcore for the Diamondbacks. You have what is it? I believe 8 games against the Dodgers to start, the Padres for a 2-game series. You have Milwaukee, you're going to Miami, you're going to St. Louis, back to the Padres, then Kansas City, Colorado, Texas. Looks like that's what it kind of hits, a little bit softer of a schedule. But this first month, like, you're going through it. So it's going to be, this is the next rotation through, next time through the rotation. You have Zach Gallen going, Merrill Kelly, and Bumgarner is back. And seemingly okay, but obviously just after one start, seeing those types of things pop up, that's obviously a little bit concerning. But Diamondbacks playing great baseball, playing a style of baseball that I think is really fun to watch, one that I think identifies with Torey Lovello really well. We talk so much about, like, with Bobby Hurley, finding that identity that kind of matches the personality of the coach, how important that was for ASU men's basketball. I think that's the same thing for the Diamondbacks, and I think that's starting to really shine through. So once again, they're taking on Milwaukee here tonight. Wade Miley, old friend of the Diamondbacks, he will toe the rubber for Milwaukee, and Zach Gallen will go for the D-backs. So a lot more to get to. We're going to dive deep into the Suns Lakers coming up next with Andrew Greif of the Los Angeles Times. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. Jordan Hamm here filling in for the big guy, and the Suns and Clippers just played, now going to be playing in the postseason in the first round here next week. And we are joined by Andrew Greif of the LA Times. Does a great job covering the Clippers. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
So overall, it feels like this time of year, especially for a lot of these teams that don't have to deal with the play-in tournament, so much of it is about getting healthy, getting hot at the right time. Who's coming in hot? Who's limping into the postseason? Where would you say the Clippers are in that regard of being ready to play and, kind of overall health and just how they're all kind of clicking together at this point?
Yeah, they've been a work in progress really all year. They've never, except for really a stretch when they saw Phoenix right before the All-Star break, that was really the only time when they felt like, what seemed like from the outside, that they really had something going, because there's been inevitably someone in and out of the lineup for injuries. They made trades right before in February, then they signed Russell Westbrook off the buyout market. So every single point that they've got, they've had something in terms of continuity. It just kind of breaks down. Someone gets hurt. The rotations have to change. So this is a team that is still talking about understanding game plans better and, making sure they know the right way they want to approach things offensively. It's not a team that is a finished product by any means. At that same point, they think that they're dangerous. I know in the locker room yesterday after the game in Phoenix, there was, just some talk about how they're here. They have time to prepare. They have, a chance to finally lock into one opponent when the last month and a half really has felt like one long playoff series, because they've had to, been in a dogfight just to make the first round. So I think there was sort of a deep breath that was taken yesterday. And although Paul George is still out and his status is somewhat murky, it hasn't seemed like he is going to be available for the first round series. Those are all indications. I know he's supposed to talk more about it today on a podcast, but it does seem like If they get him back late in the first round series, it would be gravy. But I don't think that it's something that you can necessarily count on.
Mm-hmm. With Paul George, you know, so many, you've seen so many examples of, you know, when he is on and when he is fully healthy and good, like he can completely take over games. How has the Clippers been able to navigate around that when he's not available or he's not at full strength?
Well, I think that Kawhi Leonard has looked like a best player on a championship team type of player since January, since he got over the kind of a knee setback and then an ankle injury that dogged him really for the first 2 months of the year. He's looked like that A1, you know, whatever you want to say, top five, top 10 player in the league for about 3.5 months. So that has been the key thing, right? If you have to have that level of superstar to compensate for the loss of an all-star. I think that also what's been really important is Norm Powell, who only recently got back within the last 2 weeks from a shoulder injury. He's someone who has a different skill set than a lot of players, where he can draw a lot of fouls, slow the game down, generate offense that way. Off the bench yesterday, he almost outscored the entire Phoenix bench by himself, and he's done that multiple times this year. So I think his ability to get points, to manufacture them in ways that don't just require jump shooting, is important. And then really Russell Westbrook, I mean, this is a guy who no one has considered a feared shooter for a while, but in the 9 games since Paul George has been hurt, he shot 54% from the field, 42% from three-point range on 4 attempts a game. I mean, he's actually looked quite good in that way. The big thing has been defensively, because Paul George, he often took the assignment of guarding the opponent's best player, and without him, it's just been, you know, you shift that role around, and yes, they have lots of capable defenders, but this defense also, since the All-Star break, ranks, I believe, 20th in defensive rating, which is not good at all. That's not the profile of a team that's going to go deep into the playoffs. So there are lots of concerns, I think, about just them able to stop an offense like Phoenix's over the course of, you know, 6-7 games.
You mentioned Russell Westbrook, just 21 games with the team, but clearly making an impact here. You know, for Russell, sometimes when he has gone other places, they've really had to, you know, completely kind of transform what's going on around him to have him at his best. But how has he been able to slide in and be effective so quickly with the Clippers?
Well, this team, he was brought in not to be that third star or top-tier star, but really to be a complimentary piece. And I don't know if it was because of the way his time with Lakers just obviously was so fraught from the very start. The fit with Anthony Davis and LeBron James did not go well. Or if maybe he just saw that I need to reinvent myself when he was on the buyout market. But he has accepted this quote-unquote smaller role that the Clippers have given him. And that is a role that changes, too, from game to game. Yes, he will start. He will be their starter, but there's no guarantee that he finishes the game on the floor. There have been, even last week in a critical, critical game against the Lakers, he didn't play the last 18 minutes because Ty Lue felt like other guys were, you know, feeling it better, were hotter. Ty Lue coaches by feel, admittedly. And so Terrence Mann and Eric Gordon were the guys, and Bones Highland were the guys. Russell Westbrook was not in that night. And Westbrook, to his credit, has been willing to accept that. I'm sure he's not thrilled by it, but you would not be able to tell by his reaction on the bench, where he's animated, the body language is really good. So I think that he understands that this time he had to be complimentary to the established pieces that were already there, instead of being a focal point. And I think in what they've asked him to do, he's been really disciplined. I think the thing that I would point out for Suns fans watching this series is, you know, watch early in the shot clock, when Russell Westbrook has the ball, he's not looking to get his own shot. That's been something they've asked him to do, is, you know, we want you, if the ball comes to you late in the shot clock and you're open, yes, of course, we want you to take that shot. But if it's early, don't take the pull-up jumper. Find other guys. Use your passing. Drive the basket. Find open shooters. He's been really good with that. And that was honestly a huge question upon his signing.
I see a lot of similarities between the Suns and the Clippers in terms of, you know, having, you know, continuity on the roster, and obviously the Suns just adding Kevin Durant and, you know, all the changes that the Clippers have been able to go through. As someone of a, with a somewhat outside perspective from this Phoenix market, how do the Clippers, how does this LA market view the Phoenix Suns and, you know, what they could potentially do in the postseason?
Well, I mean, the Clippers wanted to get in the postseason no matter how they could. They wanted to get into a first-round series. I think there was some talk about, well, could they game the system and maybe maneuver to a sixth seed to, you know, play Sacramento, or would they want to take the risk of getting the seventh seed? And no, they wanted to get to a first-round series. That was yesterday. They were playing to win and to win only. And that was because, yes, they wanted to get into a first-round series by any means necessary and give themselves that margin for error in a seven-game series. But also because I think they look at the Phoenix matchup as something that is winnable. You know, they played them tough. I think that you look at they, because you brought the, I think, maybe the most apt point, there is continuity issues with Phoenix. You know, I think they're still figuring out who they are. Obviously, they're 8-0 with Durant in the lineup, but they seem like a team very much because of his injury early on. And then when he, you know, injured himself in the warm-ups, which pushed back his timeline a little bit more, you know, they haven't had a whole lot of time together. So I think that this is a matchup of two teams that over the course of the next 10 days or 2 weeks, I think will really round into whatever version of the playoff team that we think they might be, whether that's good or bad. So, you know, I think that can Chris Paul, who really knocked out the Clippers with a 40-point game in 2021 in the Western Conference Finals, you know, what's he going to be like? He obviously injury prone. Can the Clippers attack him? You know, with Kevin Durant, I think honestly, if you look at the way they have guarded Luka Doncic in the past, even Steph Curry, that might be the template for how they guard or how they approach the series defensively. And maybe is why they have somewhat of confidence. In the past, they've basically allowed Doncic and Curry to get as many points as they want. Obviously, they're trying to guard them, but they've allowed 50-point games, and they basically said, we want to make you beat us, superstar, and take all of your teammates out of it, make them so out of rhythm that this whole thing is on your shoulders. And they've won games like that. I you know, I think that's probably the bet they would have to go in on, because you know that Durant is just an otherworldly talent. You're probably not going to put Kawhi Leonard on him the entire time, so you need Kawhi's offense. So if you somewhat, not necessarily concede, but allow Durant to go off and make sure that everybody else is taken care of, that might be their one path out of this series.
He is Andrew Greif. He does a great job for the Los Angeles Times covering the Clippers. Andrew, thank you so much for the time, and looking forward to this series over the next couple weeks.
Absolutely. I'm glad to get back to Phoenix. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. Appreciate Andrew Greif jumping on with us to talk Suns and Clippers postseason. Wanted to get into spring ball for both of the Pac-12 schools here in the States, ASU and U of A, and just kind of where they stand and kind of what we've been able to see over the past 6 weeks or so. This upcoming Saturday, spring game for both of them, before they wrap everything up. For ASU, the Bussin' with the Boys team is coming. The podcast, Taylor Luan, former Tennessee Titans offensive tackle, graduated from Chaparral High School, was there around the same time as Kenny Dillingham. He's going to be a coach, and then his co-host Will Compton is going to be the other coach for the team. So a lot of intrigue there. And then for U of A, I believe the Rob Gronkowski is going to be there. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's football, but it's not quite football, but it's the time of year where you want football. So, you know, you will certainly take whatever you can get. And here's like, it's just an interesting time to see where both of these teams are. Obviously, still a couple months away, but like, what are the major questions for ASU and U of A right now? ASU obviously getting Dillingham in here, getting the coaching staff that you want. They've been effective in the transfer portal, and I think that's been really helpful. And these skill guys that they have, I think are going to be a pretty impressive group, especially when you think of just a year or two removed, like what that at this time of year, like last year, it was like, can Elijah Badger be an effective wide receiver? What do the tight ends kind of look like? Glenn Thomas was the offensive coordinator. He coached Tony Gonzalez. What'll that look like? It felt like Messiah Swinson was kind of more of the prepared tight end instead of Jalen Conyers. And now a year from now, like Jalen Conyers looks like one of the top tight ends in college football, and they're going to certainly utilize them. And the depth in the pass catching department has just grown and grown and grown. The running backs, like a really effective group. I feel like it's kind of the opposite. I think it's going to be a bit by committee and some guys that I think can be pretty effective. But you're not going to have your X Valade out there. You're not going to have your Rashad White out there, I don't think. I have a feeling it's going to be a lot of guys that can show a lot of different looks and what that looks like. Quarterback, I feel like it's Trenton Bourget's job at this time to lose. You've had Drew Pine come in. You've had Jacob Conover come in. Jaden Rashada is there. Jaden has made some incredible throws where it's just like, okay, yeah, I know why this guy is as advertised. But it feels like Trenton has not done anything to relinquish that job. And I don't think he should have to if that is the case. As things change, we'll see as we get closer and closer to competition. But everything I've seen is he's been pretty darn effective under center. So I think the biggest question right now is the offensive line for ASU. They brought in some good transfers. They've had some injuries. Ben Coleman, I feel like, is a big loss to this team. This is a guy that's played a lot of football in the Pac-12. They had some holes they needed to fill interior wise along that offensive line, and he was going to be that guy to fill it. Now they've made some changes. They've been able to bring in a couple people. And I think that, they're certainly, trying to still figure that out. And it's a time when you are juggling a lot of different spots and bringing in guys and trying them at one position or the other. A fully healthy Joey Ramos, I think, does a lot for the interior of that offensive line as well. Isaiah Glass, is he going to take that next step? I think for the most part, from what we're able to observe, the defensive line is ahead of the offensive line. And I think that obviously makes a lot of sense. That's typically how it goes. But when there's so much change, I think you're looking a little bit closer at how things are going. Defensively, front seven, Brian Ward, the word that's always associated with him is chaos. And I think he's going to bring the chaos. I think this is going to be a team that blitzes a lot, kind of creates a lot of confusion. The linebackers, we'll see what they look like. Not a ton of experience coming back or coming into the portal from the portal. But you're also that, again, a year ago, it was like, oh yeah, Kyle Soley, Merlin Robertson, they have logged so much time. Like that's the one area that you don't have to worry about experience. Now it's flipped a little bit. It's going to be some new contributors going in there. And then the secondary, the Torrances of the world, Jordan Clark, some of those other guys, Clark, we haven't seen a ton of, that's just, again, this part of this time of the year, and just kind of getting through all of that. So what a difference a year makes, because last year it felt like even with, some of the coaching changes and that sort of thing, Zach Hill was, stepping away, around this time last year. A lot of changes, but I think for the better and in the long term, you see that culture being built and a lot of those guys really stepping up. For U of A, I think the name of the game is improving your defense, which is not as, I think, cut and dry as just improving your offense, bringing in some of those, big time playmakers they were able to do. You saw the numbers jump up and jump up and jump up. It's a little more nuanced with the defense. So what is that going to look like? They brought in some really good talent. I think there could be improvement there. Now, the biggest thing for me in U of A is playing with expectations. Because they overachieved last year. They beat a good UCLA team. They had some good wins. They got to five wins. So now that expectation is there. I feel like if it is five wins again, it's a bust. You need, I think, a bowl game. Hopefully you're making that jump, a win or two a year at least. Is U of A capable of that? I think so. I think they have a tough schedule to navigate. And, you know, that's going to come with it. But you have your quarterback, you have, you know, your kind of main core of wide receivers and pass catchers, you know, Dorian Singer stepping away. I think that'll hurt, but I think that there are ways that you can, you know, help supplement that a little bit. The running back, we saw it was kind of a by committee thing. Michael Wiley was kind of the lead guy, but guys got plenty of touches. I'm looking forward to seeing a healthy Speedy Luke for a full season. What that could look like, because I think that could be a really fun wrinkle to play with all of a sudden on that offense. But it's really going to come down to the defense and, you know, taking that next step with Coach Nansen and what that looks like. And again, it's not going to be like, oh, great, 3 wins, 4 wins. Like, we're going to celebrate those so highly. I'm sure they will, but it's now, you're now looking for the postseason. So, you know, are you prepared to do that? Has this group taken the necessary step to do that? This is very much a Jed Fish roster now, where before it was, you know, you're working with Kevin Sumlin's players and that sort of things. And for a lot of the guys that did stay, like, they're some of your best players. You know, Jordan Morgan, Michael Wiley, like, those are big time contributors that you've been able to hang on to from that previous regime, and you've seen them flourish. So what's that going to look like here come fall? So a lot to think about here as we head into the summer months for college football. Once again, I want to thank Andrew Greif for jumping on talking Suns and Clippers here in the first round. And I am Jordan Hamm, and this has been the Brad Sesmatt Show.